The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Vote counting continues in key U.S. midterm races as a vague picture of national results begins to take shape.
There's a very real chance we have split control of Congress. And Republicans, if they do win the House of Representatives, do not get the size majority that they had really expected to get.
Plus, abortion rights supporters prevail in state-level ballot measures, and the world's second-largest chip maker places a big bet on Arizona. It's Wednesday, November 9th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. With several key races still to be decided, Republicans remain favored to narrowly take control of the U.S. House of Representatives following yesterday's midterm elections. As of press time at 6 a.m. Eastern, Republicans have so far won 3 of the 5 seats that they need in order to regain the House majority, though many races remain too close to call. Meanwhile, control of the Senate, which is currently split 50-50 with Democrats in control, remains up for grabs with tight contests in Georgia and Nevada. According to the Associated Press, Democrats flipped governorships in 2 states, Maryland and Massachusetts, while 2 of the nation's most prominent Republican governors, Florida's Ron DeSantis and Texas's Greg Abbott, cruised to re-election. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp also held on to his seat, holding off a challenge from rival Stacey Abrams. We should note that lawmakers and political analysts have cautioned patience as states count mail-in ballots and tally results for close races. However, it's not too soon to identify some patterns among the results that we do have. And joining us now with a look at the national political picture is Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins, who's in Phoenix, Arizona this morning. Hi, Eliza.
Good to talk to you.
So let's start as broad as we possibly can. What do the national results that we have seen so far tell us broadly?
They tell us Republicans did not do as well as I think most people expected. It's really been a mixed results across the whole country. We have a lot of outstanding races, but there's a very real chance we have split control of Congress. And Republicans, if they do win the House of Representatives, that they do not get the size majority that they had really expected to get.
That's, you say, a surprise compared to what we had been expecting.
Yes. So there were a lot of reasons that we were expecting this. First of all, party in power historically tends to lose in the first midterm election. Democrats are in the White House, they're in the House and the Senate. So history. Then there was redistricting that favored Republicans that happens once every decade. And then there were a lot of things going against Democrats right now. President Biden has low approval ratings. Inflation is high. Gas prices are high. A lot of voters said that they were concerned about crime. And we were out in these states talking to voters, hearing these concerns. But there were some questions, too, that I do think went for Democrats. The Supreme Court decisions to overturn the constitutional right to an abortion that happened this summer, that did motivate voters. And we're seeing that across the country, as well as Republican candidates' alignment with former President Donald Trump, and especially his false claims of election fraud. We're seeing some rejection of those candidates from voters as well.
Eliza, are there some races across the country you could zoom us in on that sort of speak to the major dynamics of this election?
Yeah, I'll start where I am right now, which is Arizona. We've got a whole bunch of outstanding statewide races, but Democrats are certainly in contention here. They got the early vote. The first batch of votes looked really good for them. Now, it's possible Republicans fill that in on Election Day votes. They're still very much competitive, but Democrats are where they needed to be in that first batch. All the statewide candidates in Arizona, Republican candidates, embraced Trump and his claims of election fraud. They really did not appeal to independents or Democrats in a state that generally elects moderates. In Georgia, the governor's race was almost immediately called for Governor Brian Kemp. He's a Republican. But in the Senate race, Raphael Warnock, the current Democratic senator, is leading by just a hair. But that race is looking likely to go to a runoff, which means we'll have a whole nother month of campaigning before results happen in December. Another one I think is really important to talk about is John Fetterman in Pennsylvania.
I never expected that we were going to turn these red counties blue, but we did what we needed to do.
Pennsylvania flipped from a Republican to a Democrat. That's a huge win for Democrats. It was a highly competitive race. And so as of right now, Democrats are leading in how many Senate seats they have, but it definitely hangs in the balance.
You mentioned the Georgia race for Senate possibly holding up the answer of who controls the Senate for weeks if we do go to a runoff. Are there other races that we're watching here on post-election morning to try to make sense of the national landscape?
Yes, so I think Georgia would be the longest. We're waiting for results in Nevada. We really don't have very much information there. That's a highly competitive Senate race. Of course, Arizona. We are waiting for Wisconsin to be called. The Republican candidate is leading there, but it just has not been called yet. And those were sort of the group of Senate seats we were watching very closely. In New Hampshire, Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan hung on. That was a contested race as well. So Democrats did what they needed to do in the races that have been called so far, but there are several races we're watching that would decide control of the Senate.
Eliza, yesterday on the show, we were discussing that maybe individual candidates mattered less than voters' party affiliations. Is that playing out in these results?
I don't think so. I think other than to note, candidates really matter here, and I think we're really seeing that. We've seen some House seats flip on candidates who ran strong, very locally focused campaigns. Basically, everything should have been going for Republicans this year, policy-wise, with inflation and crime and history on their side, and the fact that they are not walking away with just sweeping wins says something about at least some of these candidates that they've nominated.
From what we are sort of seeing here, what can we say about what the Biden administration has in store for it come January when the next Congress starts to sit?
If the projections are correct and Republicans take the House, even if it is very narrowly, a lot less is going to get done. Biden was very lucky to have the House and Senate, even though the Senate was very narrow. It was a 50-50 Senate, but Vice President Harris sided with Democrats on key votes. If Republicans have control of the House, very few things are going to move. We can expect investigations into the Biden administration, members of Biden's family. I mean, Republicans have already said that they will do that. And it's going to be very difficult for any pieces of Biden's agenda to move. Now, if Republicans take the House, but very narrowly, it's going to be difficult for them to wrangle their members and get them on the same page. So if it's a narrow majority, could be difficult for Republicans, but they'd rather be in the majority.
And while I'm sure the televisions have been on all night in the White House, I presume they have been as well at Mar-a-Lago, where former President Donald Trump was watching results come in yesterday evening. Is it possible to say what some of the implications from these midterms might be for the former president, especially as we sort of enter the post-midterms, very early 2024 campaign season?
Well, it's important to note that we're expecting former President Trump to announce his run for president. The Wall Street Journal has reported that he's teased an announcement later this month. So these were not the results that former President Donald Trump wanted to see. He endorsed candidates in many of these races that lost. He also has started to go after Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who is a potential 2024 primary challenger. DeSantis quickly and very easily won his re-election for governor in Florida.
Thanks to the overwhelming support of the people of Florida, we not only won election, we have rewritten the political map.
But I think we need a fuller picture to understand exactly what this means for Trump and his role in the Republican Party.
That was Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins joining us from Phoenix, Arizona. Eliza, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And we should note that sound of Governor Ron DeSantis was courtesy of WFTV. All right, coming up, we'll look down ballot from last night's big Senate, House, and governor's races and survey the results of a number of key ballot measures nationwide on issues from sports betting to taxes and abortion. That's after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
All right, let's shift our discussion of yesterday's U.S. midterm elections down to the state level now and to the 130 ballot measures that voters decided the fate of in 37 states. According to the Associated Press, Maryland voters approved recreational marijuana use for those 21 and older. South Dakota voters appeared poised to follow suit, while preliminary results in Missouri showed legalization there ahead with nearly 90% of the expected vote in. Similar proposals were rejected in Arkansas and North Dakota, according to the Associated Press. The most expensive national ballot measure, meanwhile, was a California initiative that would legalize online sports betting in one of the largest potential markets in the country. According to the Associated Press, that measure was rejected by more than 80% of voters, despite gambling companies having poured more than $160 million into the measure. Voters also weighed in on taxing the rich. California voters appeared ready to reject a proposition that would have increased taxes on personal incomes of $2 million or more to fund programs to speed the state's electric vehicle transition and help fight wildfires. And in Massachusetts, votes are still being counted over whether to add a 4% tax on personal incomes of $1 million or more, with funds going toward education and transportation. And finally, voters in several states also considered measures concerning abortion. In Kentucky, an anti-abortion proposal is on track for defeat, though the race was too close to call in the early hours of Wednesday. However, results in several other states are now clear. And joining us now with a look at those results is Wall Street Journal National Legal Affairs reporter Laura Cosisto. Laura, good morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, Laura, let's go straight to the results. How did these ballot measures perform?
So we saw really more or less a clean sweep by abortion rights supporters in Tuesday's vote. We saw measures in Vermont, California, and Michigan that would protect abortion rights in those state constitutions all pass. And so really that will be seen as a sort of resounding victory for supporters of abortion.
Okay, so some victories at the ballot box for abortion rights groups. What do abortion opponents make of the results?
Yeah, so abortion opponents are really cautioning us not to read too much into the results. They note that they were well out fundraised by their opponents. And they also point to victories by a number of Republican candidates who oppose abortion for governor, for state legislature, for Congress. And so they really kind of caution us to sort of not read everything into these ballot measures.
What are the implications of these results?
I know from what I'm hearing from both sides that these results will be read as a significant victory for abortion rights supporters. It will be seen as a signal that voters are wary, perhaps, of the expansion of abortion restrictions that we've seen in recent months. And again, it's worth noting that this also comes after a resounding defeat for an initiative in Kansas that would have precluded protections for abortion from that state's constitution. And so we've really kind of seen a string of victories for abortion rights supporters this election season.
A string of victories at the ballot box. What does it mean, though, in practice that these states are making these changes to their constitutions? Does it really meaningfully change sort of the legal landscape for people living in these states?
So it won't surprise you to hear that it's not going to change very much in California and Vermont. Both of those in many respects, pretty liberal states and states where abortion is already quite lightly restricted. In Kentucky, it really does queue up a new legal fight. I think in Kentucky, this is really going to take the fight now to the state's Supreme Court, which is actually set to hear a case about abortion next week. And so I think that will be the sort of next battle in Kentucky, is whether or not they can get the state Supreme Court to recognize a right to abortion. And Michigan, I think, is in many ways the most interesting state. Michigan, we could potentially have seen abortion ban had this referendum not passed. And Michigan is also kind of surrounded. A number of its neighboring states are poised to ban abortion. So this will, in practice, I think, preserve a pretty crucial access point and is really a kind of big shift in that state where abortion has been very uncertain for really the last 6 months or so.
That was Wall Street Journal National Legal Affairs reporter Laura Casisto. Laura, thank you.
Thank you so much.
To keep up with the Wall Street Journal's continuing coverage of the midterm elections results, head to WSJ.com. Turning to non-election news now, chip-making juggernaut Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing is preparing a multi-billion dollar factory expansion in Arizona, according to people familiar with the matter. The scale of TSMC's investment in a cutting-edge semiconductor plant north of Phoenix is expected to be roughly similar to the $12 billion that it committed 2 years ago, the people said. Wall Street Journal Deputy Europe Finance Editor Quinton Webb has more.
So TSMC's increased commitment to making chips in the U.S. comes after Washington agreed to provide semiconductor makers lucrative grants in order to bring more advanced manufacturing back onto American soil. And the expansion is also a sign of the chipmakers' longer-term optimism about demand, even in the face of market upheaval. Despite the near-term gloom in the industry, chip executives still expect global sales to roughly double to more than $1 trillion a year over the next decade. That in turn underpins these huge investments in manufacturing capacity.
In a statement to the journal, TSMC said it hasn't made a final decision on whether it will add more advanced chip capacity at its Arizona site. Elon Musk has sold almost $4 billion in Tesla stock this month, according to regulatory disclosures made public on Tuesday, after buying Twitter for $44 billion. The Tesla chief executive, who's become the world's wealthiest person, thanks in large part to his stake in the car company, has sold more than $19 billion worth of the electric vehicle's stock this year. Musk had said that he was not planning any additional sales after he sold Tesla stock in April and August. It wasn't clear what prompted Musk to sell the stock, and Tesla didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Shares in the company are down more than 50% from their peak last November. And U.S. climate envoy John Kerry said on Tuesday that he spoke with his Chinese counterpart during the COP27 United Nations climate conference in Egypt, rekindling contact between the two countries and marking a thaw in U.S.-China relations. Kerry told the Wall Street Journal at a live event that, quote, "We need to be talking to each other because we're the two biggest economies in the world and the two biggest emitters." Kerry said the two countries have yet to resume formal discussions. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.